somebody sent me an email called One Atheist's 10 Suggestions by Penn Jillette. Penn Jillette is the Penn of the magic comedy team, Penn and Teller. He's the big one who does all the talking. And this list of 10 suggestions is drawn from a book of his that just came out called God, No. Signs you may already be an atheist. Penn calls himself a hardcore atheist. And what he means is, not only does he not believe in God, but he doesn't think anybody else believes in God either. Not really. I'd like to read from the book his account of how he left the church in which he grew up. He's a local boy. He grew up in Greenfield. And this is how he left the First Congregational Church of Greenfield. I went to church every Sunday until high school, when I negotiated a deal whereby I could sleep in on Sundays, provided I went to youth group on Sunday evening. We had a liberal pastor when I was growing up, and he encouraged discussions. I decided to read the Bible. Reading the Bible is the fast track to atheism. Reading the Bible means starting at in the beginning, the first verse of Genesis, and throwing it down with disgust at the grace of the Lord Jesus be with all, amen, at the end of the book of Revelation. I'm sure there are lots of religious people who've read the Bible from start to finish and kept their faith, but all the people I know who have done that are atheists. After reading the Bible, I started arguing with the pastor. At first, he encouraged me to ask anything. I started listening to the music of Martin Mull, Randy Newman, and Frank Zappa. I read Why I Am Not a Christian by Bertrand Russell, and Catch 22 by Joseph Heller, and lots of Kurt Vonnegut. My discussions with the pastor got better and better, and then they got really great. And then he decided he needed to have a talk with my parents. He explained to them that I wasn't getting much out of youth group. He told them with a little chuckle that I was converting the other kids to atheism. He told my mom and dad that I should just read and think on my own. He shut me up, in other words, and I was thrilled. My quitting the church was being sanctioned by the church. Sweet. My mom and dad couldn't very well argue with the minister about my religious education, so I got a free walk out of church. You might enjoy this book. It's rambling, it's bawdy. You have to not be offended at the F word practically every paragraph, and actually a lot worse than the F word about once every page. But it's clear from the book that Penn Jillette is a very intelligent man and a fiercely moral man. And a little later I'll pass out a copy of his 10 suggestions and we'll talk about them together. This is the organizing principle of Penn's book. Penn is very conscious of the biblical 10, which are in the right column. That's from the King James Version. That's from Exodus chapter 20. And even if he hadn't told us in the reading that he was brought up Protestant, we could tell that he was brought up Protestant because he uses the Protestant numbering for the biblical 10 commandments. Jews combine his 1 and 2. And Catholics take his 10 and split it into 9 and 10. So you can tell he was a Protestant. The biblical first commandment, as he quotes it, is, "Thou shalt have no other gods before me." This is God talking. And the meaning, I think, of that is that the most important thing to the biblical authors was God, because they felt God's intelligence had designed the universe and God's creativity had constructed the universe and God's love sustains the universe. Penn's corresponding suggestion is that the highest ideals are human intelligence, creativity, and love. Respect these above all. So he's saying it's not God's intelligence and creativity and love that's the most important thing. It's human intelligence, creativity, and love. The Bible's second commandment, thou shalt not make for thyself an idol, whether in the form of anything that is in heaven above, or that is on the earth, or that is in the water under the earth. These people living 2,500 years ago not only thought that the earth was flat, but that beneath it there was water, and beyond the sky, which they called the firmament, there was water. The meaning, I think, of the biblical second commandment is, to put it briefly, don't take your eye off the ball. We've just told you in the first commandment that God is the most important thing. So don't take your eye off God. Don't distract yourself with anything else, with an idol representing anything else in the universe. Penn's second suggestion is, do not put things or even ideas above other human beings. Let's scream at each other about Kindle versus iPad, solar versus nuclear, Republican versus libertarian, Garth Brooks versus Sun Ra, but when your house is on fire, I'll be there to help. And what he's saying there, I think, is also, don't take your eye off the ball. He said in his first suggestion that it's humans that are the most important thing. So he's saying, don't put anything else then ahead of humans. So the biblical second and Penn's second are really saying the same thing, given that their first ones are so different. Don't take your eye off the ball. Stay focused on what's most important. The biblical third says, thou shalt not take the name of the Lord thy God in vain, which in ancient times meant don't swear an oath using God's name. It had another meaning too. In ancient times, it was felt that the name of a god had magical power, and you can invoke it to control the outcomes of things. If you used God's name was Yahweh in biblical times, you could use God's name to get the dice, for example, to come up in a certain way if you were gambling. But that was using God's name in vain. Penn's third suggestion is, say what you mean, even when talking to yourself. What used to be an oath to God is now quite simply respecting yourself. Penn is aware only of one aspect of the ancient meaning, which is that one should not swear an oath using God's name. That's all he's focusing on. And Penn's meaning is, don't do that. Don't swear at all. Don't swear at all. Jesus said the same thing in the Sermon on the Mount. Penn's criticism. Penn is, I don't know if he's aware of it, but he's echoing Jesus' criticism of the same commandment in the Sermon on the Mount. Jesus in the Sermon on the Mount said, don't swear at all. Let your word be yes, yes, or no, no. And I wouldn't be surprised if the idea was planted in Penn's mind by reading Jesus' criticism. They say you can take the boy out of the church, but you can't take the church out of the boy. The biblical fourth commandment, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. This is the King James translation. This is 1611. In 1611, the word holy had an implication of whole, entire, inviolate, intact. keeping the Sabbath holy means not letting anything else intrude on the Sabbath. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy in that sense. 6 days thou shalt labor and do all thy work, but the seventh day is the Sabbath of the Lord thy God. In it thou shalt do no work, thou nor thy son nor thy daughter, nor thy manservant, nor thy maidservant, nor thy cattle, nor thy stranger who is within thy gates. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea, and all that is in them, and rested on the seventh day. Penn says, as his fourth suggestion, put aside some time to rest and think. If you're religious, that might be the Sabbath. If you're a Vegas magician, that'll be the day with the lowest grosses. Penn seems to think that the Bible's fourth commandment requires a day devoted to religious observance. I believe that's a misunderstanding. I believe the Bible's fourth commandment means simply take a day off. That's all it means. It's true that clergy tend to allow this misunderstanding of the biblical fourth commandment. But the original meaning was take a day off. And I would say that Penn's fourth suggestion and the Bible's fourth commandment are the same. They're the same. The Bible's fifth commandment, honor thy father and thy mother, that thy days may be long upon the land which the Lord thy God has given thee. That second clause is strange. What does that have to do with the first clause? Honor thy father and thy mother, that thy days may be long upon the land which the Lord thy God has given thee. I think the explanation is this. In the minds of the biblical authors, honoring one's parents didn't mean just respecting their opinions, say, which of course is a good thing. That ensures that what wisdom they manage to accumulate in their lives will be preserved and passed on. I think the meaning is also that we should care for our parents when they can no longer care for themselves. And if we do care for our parents when they can no longer care for themselves, this will make their days long. And it will make our days long when our children do the same for us. And that's the reasoning behind that second clause. Honor thy father and thy mother, that thy days may be long. Penn's fifth suggestion is, be there for your family. Love your parents, your partner, and your children. Love is deeper than honor, he says. And parents matter, yes, but so do spouse and children. I don't think the biblical authors would quarrel with what Penn has just said. I think the Bible agrees that we should love, and we should not only love our parents, but others as well. The difference in the two is Penn's perspective is more individualistic than the Bible's. The Bible's perspective is social. Penn is asking himself the question, how should I behave in order to do right by myself and the people I deal with? That's his question. I think the Bible's question is, what will help ensure a successful society? The biblical authors, when the Ten Commandments were composed, the Israelite people were living in little farming villages. And these commandments were intended to be a kind of rule of thumb for keeping peace in a small village, for helping the village to thrive and be successful. The Bible's point of view is social. And for the good of the village, yes, you want to preserve the wisdom of your parents. You want to respect them in that sense. But you also want to care for them. That will help the village thrive. And so I think these are very similar. Most of the difference has to do with the fact that Penn's perspective is individualistic and the Bible's is social. The Bible's sixth commandment, thou shalt not kill. Penn's suggestion is, respect and protect all human life. Many believe that thou shalt not kill only refers to people in the same tribe. I say it's all human life. It's not clear what the Bible means when it says, thou shalt not kill. The Bible clearly allows killing to protect yourself or protect your family, or killing in war. Or it also allows capital punishment. Penn, if you read his book, he allows the first two. He allows killing to protect yourself or your family, killing in the case of war. He only opposes capital punishment. The two are pretty close. Thou shalt not commit adultery. To indicate my level of maturity, I want to tell you a joke that just tickles me. Moses is on his way down Mount Sinai for the second time and says to the people waiting at the base, I have good news and bad news. The good news is that I've finally gotten the number of commandments down to 10. The bad news is that the one forbidding adultery is still there. Thou shalt not commit adultery, says the Bible. Penn says, keep your promises. If you can't be sexually exclusive to your spouse, don't make that deal. Keep your promises. These are pretty close, I think. And I think most of the difference is that the Bible's perspective is social and Penn's is individualistic. The Bible is against breaking promises in general, but in the seventh commandment, it focuses on the one kind of promise whose breaking is most likely to tear the fabric of society. Adultery sets neighbors at each other's throats, and it breaks up families. The Bible's perspective is social, so it focuses on that one particular promise. The Bible's eighth commandment, thou shalt not steal. Penn says, don't steal. This includes magic tricks and jokes. You know who you are. These are the same. Penn quotes the Bible as saying in the ninth commandment, thou shalt not lie. And Penn's ninth suggestion is, don't lie. You know, unless you're doing magic tricks and it's part of your job. Does that make it okay for politicians too? These seem the same, but they're not. Penn is misquoting the Bible. And he's scrupulous about quoting it accurately in every other case. Excuse me. He's misquoting it. The ninth commandment, if you're a Protestant, the eighth if you're a Catholic, doesn't say thou shalt not lie. It says thou shalt not bear false witness against thy neighbor. Thou shalt not bear false witness against thy neighbor. The context is social. The context is a court of law. The ninth commandment says, don't lie on the witness stand, essentially. It doesn't prohibit any other lying. The Bible doesn't. If you say, boy, that's a beautiful baby, and it's in fact the homeliest kid you've ever seen, that's just fine with the Bible. It's Penn who would chide you for doing that. The Bible is more liberal than Penn here. And finally, 10 in the Bible, thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's house. Thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's wife or male or female slave or ox or donkey or anything that belongs to thy neighbor. Penn's 10th suggestion is, don't waste too much time wishing, hoping, and being envious. It'll make you bug nutty. He loves that word, bug nutty. These are pretty much the same, I think. The difference is one is individual. Don't spend a lot of time wishing and hoping it's going to make you unhappy. And the other, the biblical perspective is social. Coveting your neighbor's house or wife or ox or anything that belongs to your neighbor. The perspective, of course, is male, the way all of these old things are. The Bible just wants to keep the peace. Keep the peace. If you let yourself be carried away with coveting, you may want to then start appropriating some of those things that don't belong to you, and it'll break the peace in the town. I'm struck by how similar the two lists are, even though they're separated by 3,000 years and enormous cultural differences. Penn, I know, feels the two lists are a lot different because he got his list using common sense, not listening to the commands of some god. But I think the ancients got them by common sense too, and then just put them in the mouth of a god to give them authority. Both lists are of human origin. I think Penn would agree that common sense means observing how things are, observing the nature of things, in particular observing the nature of human beings, observing human nature, observing nature in general. The biblical authors lived in a pre-scientific time. They had no word for nature. There is no word in ancient Hebrew for nature. They had no word for that. Instead, they said, God. But most of the time, I think a majority of the time, if you read at least the Jewish part of the Bible, what Christians call the Old Testament, when those ancient writers are talking about God, most of the time, they mean what we would mean if we said nature. Modern people think of ultimate reality as the material universe and its laws. Those ancients thought of ultimate reality as a big person living outside the sky. What we would call the laws of nature, they called God's laws. I think most of the difference between Penn's 10 suggestions and the Bible's 10 commandments is that when Penn and the Bible are speaking of ultimate reality, they're using different language. The Bible says God. Penn would say common sense. I'm pleased that the two lists are so similar. It tells me there's something to both lists. Something fundamental. They do reflect human nature. And it does, therefore, make sense to honor these old injunctions and to teach them to our children, even if with Penn we balk at being ordered around by some god and decide not to call them commandments but suggestions. Penn and I think we are a lot like a man in a panel on the Globe comic page. A year or so ago, there's a panel by a cartoonist named Wiley. It's called Non Sequitur. And in the panel I'm thinking of, there was a man standing on a sidewalk, and he was looking up at a sign that was the size and the shape of a no parking sign. And it had the double arrow, meaning, you know, throughout here something is forbidden. But it didn't say no parking. It said no machete juggling. No machete juggling. And the man was saying to his companion, funny, for the first time in my life, I have an urge to juggle machetes. We don't like being ordered around. We don't like these things to be called commandments. We would like it. We would prefer that they be called suggestions. And whether we think of them as coming from God or not is optional. Is optional. There's a wisdom there that is worth respecting, I think.